Family, we've been talking a lot about the civil unrest that happened in 1992. We're asking you today to reflect on LA's uprising 30 years later. You've heard many members, past and present of KJLH, share their stories, members of the community and celebrities. Today, we have the opportunity to talk with the attorney Steve Learman, civil rights attorney specializing in police brutality, represented Rodney King during this disturbing time. Good morning, Attorney Learman.
Good morning to you, my dear.
I tell you, it's been 30 years. We're all reflecting about what's happened. It's still so vivid in our memory right now. Seeing that video of Rodney King being beat over and over, where were you when you first saw that video?
Actually, I was home. I was living in the area of Studio City, and I watched the Channel 5 presentation of the video, and it was shocking, to say the least. It wasn't like it was real. It was something like out of like a horror film, all right, that somebody could be beaten like that and still live. In many ways, Rodney King was a medical miracle. The fact that his injury, his skull was cracked, his brain was damaged, his legs, I mean, he was a mess of broken bones and hurt. If you want to use one word to describe Mr. King, it was hurt. First time I saw Mr. King was the next morning following his terrible and brutal beating. And I saw him at the San Fernando Jail, which is a local jail in the L.A. County that he had been taken to. And I saw him. He had a cast on his leg. His face was bruised, battered, swollen, disfigured. It was almost like he was in Hollywood makeup, and he came out. And I took a picture of him. And a jail deputy came out and said, "Attorney, you cannot take pictures in this facility." And I said, "Well, you know what, sir? I'm taking pictures of him now, because if he shows up with any new injuries, I want to know.
Wow.
The camera will tell me." And after that, I left and went down to Men's Central Jail. And thereupon, I sat with Rodney King, and he was being interviewed by the FBI. That was the first day of our acquaintance.
How did you become the attorney for Mr. King? And what was his thoughts during that time? What was he saying to you? How was he feeling? What was he saying?
Well, I had talked to Mr. King's mother, Odessa King. She's a resident of Sacramento. She's a Jehovah's Witness, a very, very proud, dignified, well-spoken woman. And I had told her in the evening before I met her son that I would be able to go ahead and defend him in any criminal charges. I also told her that I've been a lawyer since 1972, which that's still true, and that I would represent him in a civil rights case against the city of Los Angeles for the brutality that was dished out by those police officers who worked for the city of Los Angeles. And we had I don't want to use the word chemistry because that may not apply, but I think he knew that I knew his pain, and we continued on like that. And then Rodney King, actually, over those many years that had gone by, became a member of my family, literally.
What was he saying to you at that time? What was he expressing to you?
Well, seeing as how I was a specialist and still am in personal injury, like accident cases, people that are horrifically injured, mangled, brain injuries, amputations. So when people express to me, you know, why they hurt, I usually say and still do, "Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt?" And when I would say to him, Rodney, well, I called him Glenn because that was his middle name and the family called him Glenn, so I called him Glenn. "Glenn, where does it hurt?" And he would look at me and he would just say, "All over, Steve. It's all over." And he was really telling the truth, because it wasn't a part of his body that wasn't in pain. And so I had a great deal of empathy. But the good thing about my practice at that time, which still is, I had a network of doctors and physicians in all specialties, especially reconstructive surgery. And Mr. King's jaw, his skull, these injuries were addressed by top specialists here in Los Angeles. And if you look at the pictures of his face, his body, when he had been beaten, and then you look at see what he looked like when he said to the community, the world at large, "Can we wrong?"
Yeah.
The heartfelt speech he gave.
Yeah.
You look at him, he's put together. He's always been a very, very handsome man, but you wouldn't know he was a handsome man when you saw the pictures of what these cops did to him. But when he emerged and he was in the back of my office there in Beverly Hills 30 years ago or so. I guess it was the third day of the riot. He had emerged, if you will, and he went from a beating victim to a civil rights icon. And
the officers,
I said, you know, you'll always have to be Rodney King. You have a case that's in my office. It's a legal case. It'll be closed one day, someday, but I'll always be in your life if I can. But you have to live your life as Rodney King. And people are going to want things from you. People are going to expect things from you.
And let me interrupt you right there, Attorney Learman. When the officers were found not guilty and they were acquitted, and the whole, all of Los Angeles seemed to, you know, erupt into this, to this chaos, what was Mr. King's reaction when he saw that, you know, this happened? Did he have a feeling of guilt? Did he feel like he was to blame? Did he feel like he needed to jump in? What was he feeling and telling you
outrage.
At that time?
Pure outrage, because I had been in the courtroom while these four officers were tried, and these jurors must have been under a rock the whole time, because what they saw in the trial, as the case was presented very skillfully by the district attorney, there were two of those fellows, Terry White, a black lawyer, and Alvin Yokelson, a Jewish fellow like myself, and those two tried the case, and they did an excellent job. And it was as though the jurors were just like sitting there watching the sky go by and didn't really pay attention to the evidence. So I was right outside in the parking lot where I was being interviewed every day by Court TV. That was their first case that they televised. And I hollered to the rafters, this can't be true, this is unjust. And the people that were in attendance in the courtroom and outside the building in Simi Valley up in Ventura County, you know, it was just like everybody was like in a state of shock. So I called him. I called Ronnie. He was staying at my, I have another apartment that I had for him, and he was staying there under a different name. And I said, Glenn, you won't believe what happened. And he said, I know what happened, Steve. What the I can't say the word exactly, but I'm sure your listeners can probably figure out. He was in shock. It was a blend of shock and anger. How could this be? What was wrong with those people? And I said, you know, they're human beings, and we as humans don't always do the right thing, and they did the wrong thing. But I think you'll have a day of justice coming for you, but you just have to be patient. And for the time being that it took for me to drive from Simi Valley back to Studio City, I was very concerned about his mental health, and I didn't want him to have something akin to post-traumatic stress disorder, which he ended up having anyway, you know, as a result of the beating. But I just was afraid for him.
Attorney Learman, let me take you now to the point where this has been happening for days and days, and they start talking about the deaths and that so many people are injured. What pulled Mr. King to finally step out and say something? Did he say to you, I have to say something to stop my people? What encouraged him or promoted him to get up and finally speak out?
Well, that's an excellent question, actually, because Mr. King was devoted to his mother, Odessa, and she had the Jehovah's Witness faith. The family didn't want him to do anything in public media, as it was known then. There were no cell phones, no internet really like that, like we have. And at the third day of the riot, riot unrest, you can call it what you want, but it was a reality. And unrest is for sure the word of choice. People were just so angry at this result. All across all communities. It wasn't, you know, the black community, the white community, the Latino community. Everybody was like, what happened here? This is wrong. This is just wrong. And I said, Glenn, you're going to have to say something. And he says, no, I don't want to do that. It's the third day of the riot. Everything is settled down. I don't want to start trouble. I said, look, let me tell you something. There are people out there. There are people shooting at each other. These shopkeepers, these Korean shopkeepers, whatever, are shooting. Everyone's shooting. People are dying. And they're all screaming, Rodney King, Rodney King. And they're burning stuff up. Okay, the community is suffering. Because if you don't say something, they're screaming, Rodney King. By your silence, you condone it. You've got to say something. I said, now it's time to go to wardrobe. He said, wardrobe? I said, yeah, we have to figure out what you're going to wear. Because I have a show business background. I said, you know, ever see a TV show called Mr. Rogers? He said, oh, yeah, the kiddie show. I said, well, you notice when Mr. Rogers comes into where they're going to do the show, you know, you call that a set, right? He takes off his coat and he puts on a sweater. Well, that's what you're going to do. You're going to have a sweater, not a suit. So it'll slim down those broad shoulders. And we had it. He had just been given a nice sweater. His wife gave it to him. And he wore that sweater that you see in the Can We All Get Along video of him talking. And he was, I believe in many ways, there was spirituality that filled him for that moment. And he came with those words because usually Rodney and I, Glenn, we didn't talk like that. I mean, I was his lawyer for sure, and we talked about his case all the time. But we became friends, and we had a social relationship. His kids would come over to my house; they'd all play in a pool with his kids, you know. So this relationship. But when he said what he said, it was like, wow, you know.
Yeah. When we hear those words today, 30 years later, can we all get along? In your opinion, what do you think Mr. King is thinking of us now? How far have we come? Are we getting along? In Mr. King's opinion, I'm surely asking you to assume, but in your opinion as well.
Well, you know, the thing about the experience of representing Rodney Glenn King, I met him that first day in the jail, and then when his funeral was taking place at Forest Lawn, I went up on the stage where his open casket was, and people had been viewing it. And there's a young man in attendance working for the Forest Lawn people, and he was going to close the casket. I said, "No, no, don't do that so fast." And I went up on the stage, and I looked at him. He was in the coffin, and my mind reeled with all of our experiences together. And I said goodbye to him. I said, "If there's nobody that'll ever know what we did together, and you know what you've done for our community." So much deserve your words, but I have to say goodbye. And I told the little attendant, I said, "Okay, close it up." I think Mr. King would look at this like, kind of like I do, you know, as a person of the Jewish faith. You know, everybody knows about the Holocaust. You know, and people have been after Jews with hate and murder for thousands of years. Well, in many ways, the black experience is like a black Holocaust. The only difference is that this is not something that was over and done with when Hitler killed himself. The Black Holocaust continues, and it's replete with brutality, hate, just bigotry. So, you know, it doesn't matter much what color your skin are because what color your skin is because obviously hate knows no color. And so that's what Mr. King would probably think. In the aftermath of things like George Floyd, that poor man, he was murdered by police. Everybody got to see that. That was a video. That was something else. But I don't think he'd be satisfied that things have improved much.
Attorney Learman, we thank you so much for joining us this morning, sharing your account, and really giving us a more vivid picture of Mr. Rodney King. You know, we, of course, saw him on television. We hear different accounts from, you know, different reports. But for you to be so close to him, for him to be your family and you to share and give different details about his children playing at your home, we certainly appreciate that. And, of course, today, 1992, remembering 30 years later, L.A. civil unrest, we remember here on Radio Free, 102.3 KJLH.